I'm supposed to announce this is in Zechen. I guess they told me to announce this the entire day of them. That's what they told me on the desk.
No. No, I'll tell you who it's really. It's really mine, but I think I should.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Hi, ladies. Ladies. First of all, I just want to ask everyone and remind you. You know what, don't turn it on yet, because they don't need to hear this. I just would like to remind everyone, please, right now, to turn off your cell phones. If you need to have it on vibrate, to please sit in the back of the room just in case you have to leave. For your answering the phones, please, please, please. The other thing I want to ask before we start is to please hold all your questions until afterwards. It's very disturbing to some women. They lose their train of thought, and Baruch Hashem, this class is growing. So please, if you have questions, please wait till the end. Now we're good. Okay. I'd like to welcome everyone here today, and also welcome the Silver Spring Jewish Center, men and women who are joining us, not at this moment, but very soon to hear the shiur as well. We welcome you and thank you for coming, and specifically thank Fran Hisler in Silver Spring, who is sponsoring and working out the details to make this Rabbi Breidowitz shiur a successful shiur, not only here in Eretz Yisrael, but also in Silver Spring. Welcome. Silver Spring, Maryland. It's a little bit south of Baltimore.
Thank you, I guess. Again, also welcome. Welcome to our... Welcome to our friends in Silver Spring, and I guess all of us here in Yerushalayim have to be in our best behavior. Certainly, I have to be in my best behavior, and Bezras Hashem, it should be with Hatzlacha. As you know, I wasn't here last week, and I apologize. I had to make a... I don't think the mic is on. I had to make a 24-hour trip to London, literally, to be maspid our Rosh Yeshiva of Or Sameach, Rav Mendel Weinbach, and I just went in and out, and Baruch Hashem, I didn't have to miss too many shiurim. Today we are beginning a new unit, and actually it corresponds fortuitously with the parsha of the week, but only for 1 week. By next week it'll be off, and that is the discussion of Matan Torah and the Aseres Hadibros. And of course, although it is indeed the case that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Moshe Rabbeinu 613 commandments, and one is not allowed to assume that any commandment is more important than another commandment. In fact, the Gemara in Brachos tells us that there used to be a custom that every single day the Aseres Hadibros would be read in the Beis HaMikdash. Because of its importance, the Chachamim were mevatel that minhag, because too many people were saying the only thing that's important in the Torah is the Ten Commandments. You hear this a lot among many Jews who are not totally observant, in which they say, well, I keep the Ten Commandments. Of course, even that is not totally true. Rabbi Feldman of Atlanta, Rabbi Emanuel Feldman Sr., who now lives here, tells the story that a woman used to visit him constantly in his office during the week, and she would always begin the conversation by saying, I'm not so religious, Rabbi, but I keep the Ten Commandments. And she was doing this for 20 years. And he would normally just listen to it, good-naturedly. But one day he was running a very tight schedule and he really didn't have time to talk to her. So he kind of snapped back a little impatiently. Oh yeah, what about the Fourth Commandment? So she thinks for a few seconds and says, well, what is the Fourth Commandment? He says, remember the day of Shabbos to keep it holy. So she said, oh, is that there? You know. So in truth, even when people say they keep the Ten Commandments, they actually mean they keep some of the last five. Hopefully they don't kill, they don't steal, etc. Some of the first five, you know, even that we may not necessarily keep. But be it as it may, the Chachamim were concerned with the idea that some people only consider the Ten Commandments to be the real important part of the Torah. As a result, the Chachamim actually decreed that you're not, that at least in a congregation, you're not supposed to say it every day. So people should not give it greater importance than the rest of the Torah. Based on this, there's a very interesting tshuva of the Rambam. This is a responsa. It is not in the Rambam's code, but it's a responsa. All of you know, if you've been in shul, both on Shavuos and every Shabbos, that when we read the Aseres HaDibros, the custom is that everybody stands up for the Aseres HaDibros. The Rambam wrote in a tshuva that he considered that to be an improper minhag, because the same idea why the Chachamim said don't do it every day, so people shouldn't think the Aseres HaDibros is the only important part of the Torah. The Rambam argues that same logic would indicate you shouldn't stand up bedafka for the Aseres HaDibros, because then that'll give people the impression that only that comes from Hashem and the rest of the Torah does not come from Hashem. This is a tshuva of the Rambam. As you know, however, the Minhag HaOlam is not to follow that psak, and we do stand up. And Rav Moshe Feinstein gives a number of reasons for it. One reason he gives is that we do stand up for other parts of the Torah as well. We stand up for Oz Yashir that we read yesterday, and therefore, through our behavior overall, we are not showing that only the Aseres HaDibros came from Hashem. And he also points out that the proper minhag is that you stand up a few psukim before the Aseres HaDibros and a few psukim afterwards, and as a result, it is not only the Aseres HaDibros. But be it as it may, this is an interesting tshuva of the Rambam. It's also interesting that why the Rambam, the tshuvos don't have the same authority as the halachos that he puts into the code itself. And it's interesting that he did not put this ruling in the code itself. Just to give you another interesting example of where the Rambam wrote something in a tshuva that he did not incorporate in the halachic compendium Mishneh Torah. And it's nothing to do with this, but it's an interesting parallel idea of sometimes the Rambam paskins, but he was not koveya it in his final codification. And that is, the Rambam, in addition to being the Gadol Hador and the Posek Hador and one of the greatest physicians of the generation as well, and he was the physician to the Sultan in Cairo, the Rambam also had a shul. The Rambam was a local Rav of the shul in Cairo. Imagine having the Rambam as your personal rabbi. And the Rambam had a problem that every rabbi faces, at least in America, I don't know, maybe less so in Eretz Yisrael, and that is talking during davening. The Rambam had a shul where people would talk, especially during Musaf, when it's almost time to leave and there'll be a nice kiddush after shul or whatever it would be. And we actually know the Rambam actually did have nice kiddushes in his shul. We actually have records of that. And the question is, what do you do about talking? So the Rambam had a very interesting solution that is still followed by Yemenites to this day. And that is, the Rambam essentially eliminated the repetition of the Shmoneh Esrei for Musaf. The Rambam said that instead of a full repetition of the Shmoneh Esrei, it'll be what you call a Hecha Kedusha, meaning the Chazan would say the first three brachos and Kedusha, and then everybody would daven the silent Amida, and then they would go home. And in that way, the Rambam says, there was less occasion for people to talk during the Chazaras Hashatz. So he literally eliminated Chazaras Hashatz of Musaf. Now the Yemenites actually still have that custom to this day, but the Rambam in the Mishneh Torah did not codify that as a rule, presumably because he hoped that future shuls wouldn't have so much schmoozing in that way. So occasionally you have an interesting divergence between the Rambam's private psak and kind of the public psak that he put in the Mishneh Torah. But be it as it may, even though it is indeed the case that every part of the Torah came from Hashem, and in that sense the Aseres HaDibros are no more from God than any other part of the Torah, there still is something very, very important about the Aseres HaDibros that makes them unique. That is, they are the only portion of the Torah which we received through direct revelation of the Divine Presence. Meaning, the first two commandments, I am the Lord your God, and you shall not have any other gods, we actually heard them directly from God. And even the other 10, or the other 8, even though we did not hear the actual words, they were given to Moshe amid a revelation of kolos ubrakim, of thunder, of lightning, of gilui shekhinah. Every other commandment we heard secondhand through Moshe. Moshe simply came down and said, this is what Hashem told me. And theoretically, One could have said Moshe made it up. It was the experience of Matan Torah that made us realize that Moshe was HaKadosh Baruch Hu's designated prophet to communicate mitzvahs. And that is why HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, in anticipation of Matan Torah, Gam b'cha ya'aminu li'olam. Through Matan Torah, this is a very critical phrase, through the process of Matan Torah, through the revelation of Gilui Shechina that was seen by 3 million people, b'cha, in you, Moshe Rabbeinu, ya'aminu li'olam. They shall believe in your nevuah forever and ever. The Kuzari says the whole basis of Yiddishkeit is based on the principle of mass revelation. Every other religion, the claim is God appeared to one person, two people, a small number of people. And then, if you believe me, if you trust me, I might be able to convince you that God appeared to me, even if I'm lying. But Judaism makes the claim not that God just appeared to Moshe. Judaism makes the claim that HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared to 3 million people. Now, how do you make up such a lie if that wouldn't be true? In other words, I go over to you and I say, Hashem appeared to me yesterday. I might be able to convince you of that if you trust me. But what if I go over to you and I say, Hashem appeared to you yesterday? That's going to be much harder because you don't have a recollection of that. And if I could do it to you by hypnosis or something else, could I do it to 3 million people that had that belief? So the Kuzari makes the argument that the fundamental proof for the truth of Matan Torah is the otherwise audacious claim that Hashem appeared to everybody. Because that is not a lie. If it would be, God forbid, a lie, right? Let's look at it. If it would be a lie, it wouldn't be possible for that to be accepted, for that to be believed. Now, you might make the argument, well, a lot of people don't believe it. People don't believe it. Now, but here's the point. The point is the following. Even if you want to be a skeptic, let's imagine you want to say that Matan Torah didn't happen. But the one thing you cannot deny is that 200 years ago, most of the Jewish people believed it did happen. So even if you deny it as a historical fact, you cannot deny that it was believed to be a historical fact. You see, that's a subtlety. I mean, no matter how diehard a reformed person you are, you cannot deny that Jews believed this, even if you say it didn't happen. And the Kuzari's argument is, how could you get people to believe it? How does such a lie start? How do you get up the next morning after Matan Torah and convince 3 million people that something happens? Right, this is the Kuzari's argument. Like the Kuzari, although the Kuzari is known as a work of Jewish philosophy, it actually is a very anti-philosophical book. The Kuzari's argument is that proof of revelation is not based on philosophy, it is based on history and the inherent improbability of falsification. Okay, and that's why the Aseret HaDibros are so important. Of course, we will see that, of course, the Ten Commandments is a bit of a mistranslation. The word Dibrot, of course, does not mean commandments, it means statements, and in fact, in the Aseret HaDibros, there are actually 13 commandments out of the 13. So really, it's 10 utterances, 10 statements, 10 general categories, and we'll try to look at that. The Rishonim also tell us that within the Aseret HaDibros are all of the 613 mitzvahs of the Torah. So they are seen as fundamental principles which encompass all 613. Unfortunately, Chazal did not give us a breakdown of how you could put all of the 613 under the Aseret HaDibros, but the Ramban, actually wrote a little sefer in which he shows how the Aseret HaDibros, how each dibor, includes certain mitzvahs, so that all together you get 613. Well, in a volume that's called Kisvei HaRamban, it's two volumes, So you'll see in Chelek Beis of Kisvei HaRamban a sefer on Taryag Mitzvos in the Eser Sedibra. So it's part of the Kisvei HaRamban. It's not printed separately. By the way, just as an aside, let me tell you, the Vilna Gaon made another observation. The Vilna Gaon made an observation that Parshas Hazinu, Moshe Rabbeinu's farewell song, has 613 words. And he says each word in Hazinu is keneged a mitzvah. Now again, the Gra did not write, tell us, but a Talmud of the Gra wrote a sefer called Shiras Chaim, which is totally out of print. I just came across the sefer yesterday. I don't have the sefer. And the Shiras Chaim takes each word of Hazinu and says, this word is keneged this mitzvah, and he tries to show why. That's another thing, Hazinu. That there's a Ramban that says, Hazinu also contains the future story of every single person who ever lived and ever will live in the world. That a person's whole life is in Parshas Hazinu in various ways. Okay. But be it as it may, therefore, in a way, we kind of have a bit of schizophrenia here. On one hand, Chazal were very concerned that we don't make the mistake that only the Aseres HaDibros come from Hashem. And therefore, ad kedei kach, that they wanted to diminish the prominence that we give to the Aseres HaDibros. Right? That's kind of one idea. At the same time, the Aseres HaDibros are unique because they were the only part of the Torah that was communicated with the open and miraculous Giloy revelation of the Shechina that in turn convinced us of the truth of every other part of the Torah. And of course, they also contain the Ramazim, the allusions to all of the 613 mitzvahs. So it all comes from Hashem, the whole Torah, but there is indeed a special chashivas in the Aseres HaDibros. But what I want to talk about today is I want to talk a little bit about the precursor to the Aseres HaDibros, and that is the idea of the preparations for Matan Torah itself that culminated in the Aseres HaDibros. At the end of yesterday's Parsha, the Jewish people come to the oasis of Rephidim, and they encounter the enemy of Amalek that tried to destroy them, and there was a victory. And we are told that Moshe was told to write down that victory. In fact, it's an interesting question. If you ask the question, what was the earliest part of the Torah to be written down? The answer is last week, Amalek. Before there's a Sefer Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe, Kisov Sos Zikaron Basefer. Write it down as a remembrance in a book. Right, so that is the very first writing of the Torah that is even before Matan Torah itself, the Parsha of destroying Amalek, remembering Amalek. Okay, and then of course we had the Mun, right? Yesterday was Tu B'Shvat and Shabbos Shira. It's interesting, somebody made the, I don't know what to do with this observation, but somebody made this interesting observation that Shabbos Shira is literally the only Shabbos of the year that's named after a Torah reading instead of a Haftorah. For example, Shabbos Shuva is named after the Haftorah between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, Shuva Yisrael Ad Hashem Elokecha, Shabbos Shuva. Shabbos HaGadol is named after the Haftorah of Malachi, Hine Anochi Sholech Lechem Es Eliyahu Hanavi Lifnei Bo Hashem Yom Hashem HaGadol V'Hanora. Right, so everything is always after the Haftorah. Parsha Shkolim, well, Parsha Shkolim, okay, that's after the Maftir. Shkolim, Zohar, etc. Shabbos Shira is the only one that's named after the Torah reading, the main Torah reading itself. I don't know what to make of it, but this was an observation. But we had the Mun, and we had the Mocham of Amalek. But then, Perek Chaf of Shmos begins the following. Bachodesh Hashlishi, on the third month, Nisan Iyar Sivan, let's say from the time that they left Mitzrayim, Bayom Hazeh, on Rosh Chodesh Sivan, Bo Midbar Sinai, they come to Midbar Sinai. That is Pasuk Aleph. And so Pasuk Aleph tells me they are now situated in Midbar Sinai, Rosh Chodesh Hashlishi, which of course is the 49th day. I'm sorry, not the 49th day, but it's no, minus, 49 minus 6 or 7, that'll be a machlokes, right, 42nd or 41st day of the Omer. Now, the next pasuk seems to go backwards. Vayisu mirefidim. They had left the oasis of Refidim. Vayavo Midbar Sinai. They came to Midbar Sinai. Vayachanu b'Midbar. They encamped in the desert. Vayichan Shom Yisrael Neged Ahor. And they encamped at the foot of the mountain. So the question becomes, Pasuk Aleph already told me they're in Midbar Sinai. And I know from last week's Parsha that they had gone from Refidim. So what is the second Pasuk adding? The second Pasuk seems to be going backwards after we already know they're in Midbar Sinai. Right? So one question is, what is the purpose of that second Pasuk? The second question is, in that second Pasuk itself, there is redundancy because it says, Vayisu mirefidim, vayavau midbar Sinai, they came to Midbar Sinai, vayachanu b'midbar, and they encamped. You don't need to say both expressions. Vayavau, vayachanu? Just say vayachanu, or vayavau. Third question is, right after it says vayachanu midbar Sinai, it then repeats vayichan sham Yisrael nagador. Now, it repeats, but it also switches from plural to singular. So what's the function of the second pasuk bichlal? Everything in that second pasuk we already know. Number two, why is there a repetition of vayavou vayachanu? And number three, why does it then again repeat yachanu yichan, which is a repetition on one level? But it's also a discrepancy because it switches from a plural to a singular. So there's a beautiful comment of the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, Rav Chaim Ben Attar, a great, great gadol who came from Morocco and was nifter in Yerushalayim and is buried on Har HaZeitim. And the Or HaChaim says that Pasuk Aleph and Pasuk Beis are focusing on two different things. Pasuk Aleph is focusing on the physical journey to Sinai, and it simply says, "Bachodesh Hashlishi, we came to Midbar Sinai." And we know that's from the place called Refidim, that's not a problem. But Pasuk Beis is articulating the steps that you spiritually have to go through in order to be ready to accept Hashem's Torah. These were steps that our ancestors had to go through, but they're also steps that we have to go through as individuals. And the reason is because every single day we have to re-accept HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah. In fact, it's very interesting. The Sifrei Chassidus say, why is Shavuos called Matan Torah, the giving of the Torah, and it's not called the day of accepting the Torah? And one of the reasons that's given is Matan Torah did happen once. Hashem gave Am Yisrael the Torah. Accepting the Torah, you must do every single day. Kabbalah Satorah is not a past event. It is a present event. Right? A person must re-accept. You don't keep mitzvahs today because you did them yesterday. You keep mitzvahs today because we are pledging ourselves to Hashem's service every single day. We are recreated every day. We are accepting our mission every day. So therefore, the Or HaChaim's four steps, as we'll see in a moment, I'll show you his four steps, are not just describing the history of Matan Torah, but it is describing, at least in very abbreviated form, the procedure and process of Kabbalah Satorah in our daily lives. So now let's go through the analysis of the four divisions in Pasuk Beis. This is Perek Chaf, Pasuk Beis. Step number one is Vayisu Mirefidim. You must leave the place that is called Refidim. Now what is Refidim? Refidim is a place indeed. It was an oasis. It was the place where Amalek attacked us, and Amalek was the very first nation that attacked us. It's like the mashal that the Medrash gives us, that when the Jewish people left Mitzrayim, they were like a boiling hot bath. Everybody was afraid to touch them because of the Makos, because of Kriyas Yamsuf. Amalek jumped into that bath. They got burnt. But they made it more palatable, more comfortable, more possible for other nations to think that they could attack the Jewish people. But Chazal say, Rephidim has a double meaning. It's the name of a place, but it is also kind of an acronym or an abbreviation for Rafu Yedehem Min HaTorah. Amalek was able to attack us because we were in the spiritual place called Rephidim. Now, what is the phrase Rafu Yedehem? Now, again, it's a bit of an idiomatic expression. Rafu Yedehem literally means weakness of the hands. But the analogy that Chazal employ with that Lashon is the following. When you care about something very deeply that you're holding, you tend to hold it tight, right? Imagine that you're crossing a busy street with your baby. So you're going to hold the baby, you know, very, very tight, because God forbid, you don't want anything to happen. When you care less about something, your grip is looser, and if it falls out of your hand, you know, it's not a big deal. So Rafu Yedehem, weakness of the hands, refers to the concept of complacency, in which a person serves Hashem, but you know, it's a matter of take it or leave it. You know, if it's convenient, I do it. If it's not convenient, I don't. But it's kind of burdensome to me. It's not something I really care about. It's not something that gives me enthusiasm. So Chazal say that when there's an attitude of Rafu Yedehem Min HaTorah, that allows Amalek to attack you. Because Amalek itself represents the idea of indifference. In fact, it's interesting how to view Amalek, because there are different chazals. One view of Amalek is kind of this demonic force of evil. Right? That's one way we often view Amalek, this evil. But there's another view of Amalek, in which Amalek represents cool, calculated cynicism, where nothing is important in life. It's a different view. It's not that Amalek, in fact, it's not that Amalek is the axe murderer who wants to destroy. But Amalek is a different type of axe murderer. Not the violent, out of control murderer, but the one who murders by the cynical implication that there's nothing really important in life, and that all views are equal, and everything is a matter of opinion, right? As the Altam Vareach Ein Lisfakeach. Right, whatever it is. And therefore, Amalek represents the inner coldness and indifference to anything that might have transcendental importance. Now, Chazal seem to look at it from the words Rafu Yedehem, Rafidim. Rav Tzadok locates it in a different part of the Pasuk, not in B'Shalach, but in Kiseitze. Amalek is described is asher korcha baderech. Now, korcha literally means they encountered you when you were traveling. But Chazal say korcha is they made you cold. And Rashi uses the medrash that they jumped into the hot bath, right? That's they made you cold. Rav Tzadok takes the same etymology, but he offers a different interpretation. That the sheirish, the root that makes us vulnerable to Amalek is when there's an inner coldness in our hearts. And spoken like a true chassid, so to speak, and that is, a person can do mitzvahs, a person can go through the motions of serving Hashem, but when it's done with coldness, indifference, that is an inner Amalek within, and it is the inner Amalek within that makes us vulnerable to the Amalek without. By the way, it's fascinating that Rav Tzadok himself writes this way, because if you know a little about Rav Tzadok's life, you get an overpowering sense of how autobiographical those statements were. Rav Tzadok grew up in a misnaged home, obviously, and Rav Tzadok was an eloi, was truly a genius. Like he knew Shas at a very young age. Kind of, you know, the art school biographies could truly be written about Rav Tzadok, where everybody knew Shas at the age of four, and he was a tremendous genius. And as geniuses sometimes do, he would travel around Europe. He wanted to meet the great rabbis and kind of see how smart they are, because he kind of had a certain, I don't want to say arrogance, it's not covet for me to talk that way, but he had a certain point in which, you know, he was just as smart as they were. And one time he just stepped in, by accident almost, there was a Hasidish Rebbe, the Mei Shiluach, the Ishbitzer. And the Ishbitzer himself became very famous through Shlomo Kalbrach and the like. and he's listening to the Ishbitzer. And he has, and again, forgive me for using a Christian term, but he had an epiphany at that point. And he's listening, and he's transfixed. And all of a sudden he starts clutching his head and his heart, and he says, all I was a brain. All I am is a brain. He says, but my heart is now on fire. And he starts screaming to the people, why aren't you on fire? Because apparently the other Hasidim were used to it, more or less. They were not as moved. And it totally changed his life. He remained the great, great genius in Torah. But it totally changed his life. That one experience totally changed his life. It gave him a whole different understanding of what was important in serving Hashem. And he became the Ishbosheth's devoted chassid, and although he was, again, it's hard to say, but he probably was a bigger Talmud Chacham than even the Rebbe, but for 30 years, he refused to speak publicly. He says he is here to learn, he is not here to teach. And only at the end of his life, he became a Rebbe for 5 years. And he did write a lot during that time, and he spoke to people privately, but he refused to take any public role. He says, I'm here to be a chassid, I'm not here to be a Rebbe. But be it as it may, if you know a little bit of that biography, I think you can appreciate even more so Rav Tzadok's idea that Amalek, the Amalek inside of us, is karcha, the coldness of the heart. Right? So, going back to the Or HaChaim, the first step towards truly accepting Hashem's Torah is to leave the oasis of Rafidim. Leave complacency. Try to embrace passion, excitement, geschmack. This is very, very hard. You know, it is harder than, well, I guess all of us know the nisyonos of this. You know, living as a religious Jew, and Baruch Hashem in Eretz Yisrael, it is easier in that sense, but still, there is a lot of detail that we have to be focused on. There is detail. Shabbos, Yom Tov, Pesach coming up, but I don't want to scare anybody, and the like. And we do this with nobility, we do this with discipline, we do this with commitments. But it's understandable that there are times that we're overwhelmed, and there are times in which, although we may not want to acknowledge it, it's kind of a burden. And it's very hard to develop the mind. And of course, and even if it's not a burden, but sometimes we do the same thing over and over again, whether it's davening three times a day or the same type of things over and over and over again. Maybe even on Yom Kippur, when you daven 24 hours straight, that's always strikes me. After Ne'ilah, still got to do Maariv, you know. I mean, gee, you know. I mean, can't anything count here? You know, okay. The answer is no, life goes on no matter what. You know, so one of the most precious gifts we can give our children, but we have to have it ourselves, is to try to have a sense of joy and enthusiasm for the mitzvahs of Hashem, to look at them as privileges, to look at them as gifts, to look at them as opportunities to feel divine love. And that is the journey away from Rafidim. When you're in Rafidim, there is coldness. When you're in Rafidim, there's a sense of burden. When you're in Rafidim, there's the inner Amalek, that things don't matter, and that makes us vulnerable even to the outer Amalek. That is step one in the journey, Vayisu Mirafidim. Now, phrase 2 and 3 both reference Sinai, Midbar. Vayavo Midbar Sinai, Vayachanu b'midbar, right? So there's midbar, midbar. So here the Or HaChaim HaKadosh says, midbar does double duty because it's picking up two different aspects of midbar, right? For many people, they find midbar generally to be although it's a difficult place to live, but they find a certain beauty in the desert. And that beauty might be defined as the simplicity of the desert. The desert is a place where there's not a lot of stuff. You don't have a lot of buildings. You don't even have a lot of trees. The very emptiness of the desert is a tribute to the simplicity of a life that is devoid of a lot of what you might call excess materialism. So the Aruch Hayim says, the second step in our journey to Hashem is to try to simplify our lives without excessively being preoccupied with materialism and hedonistic pleasures. Now, again, this is a bit tricky, because on one hand, b'derech klal, the Torah is not in favor of what you might call extreme asceticism, right? The famous text is, of course, Rashi's statement, which is really from the Gemara. Rabbi Elazar HaKapor says that the reason a Nazir has to bring a sacrifice at the end of his Naziris is because he committed the sin of being a Nazir because he deprived himself of legitimate pleasures. The Torah says you're allowed to drink wine. He deprives himself of those pleasures. Therefore, the Nazir is considered to be a sinner. The Talmud Yerushalmi says, and your kids can use this on Chol HaMoed, that liyasid lava, we will have to give a din v'cheshbon for every pleasure we could have gotten from this world, that's mutter, that is, that we didn't get. So if your child says, got to take another roller coaster ride or whatever it is, you know, he can quote the Yerushalmi in that support. Rav Shifnafal Hirsch, who of course lived near the Alps in Germany, said, Hashem is going to question us why we did not look at the beauty of the Alps that was put there for us to enjoy. And of course, with respect to women, Chazal say that a beautiful home that a woman will also be instrumental in creating is something that is marchiv. It expands a person's consciousness and they're able to focus. So on one hand, the Torah itself is not ascetic. It is not calling on renunciation. But at the same time, it's also true that the more that our minds are filled with the material acquisitions, the less sensitive is our soul going to be to Ruchnius and Kedusha. It's like a junk diet. If a person just eats junk food, they're not going to appreciate fine cuisine. Well, lahavdil, if one is accustomed to the instant gratifications of the physical, one is going to be less attuned to the spiritual pleasures that require work, that require effort, that are gradual, that are not sudden, but that one gets the day-to-day victories in Avodas Hashem. So that is the second step, which is the first mention of Bamidbar, and that is move away from an over-connection to the physical and connect to that which is spiritual, using the physical as a tool and as a means, as a mechanism to glorify Hashem, but not as an end in itself. I remember, you know, one of the commercials for Pepsi, it was on a bottle cap. It said, this was like, ten years, maybe they still have it, I don't know. But it says, drink Pepsi, get stuff. Now, get stuff is to me a very evocative expression, because it's not even a question of what it is. It makes no difference as long as it's stuff. That's kind of, you know, things just for the sake of things, not because of their utility, not because of their functioning, not because they would help you in any way. It's just stuff. I want to get stuff. Right? So that's kind of the idea of Midbar. The Midbar has a beauty precisely because it's so empty. There's so little there. And therefore one could focus on what matters in life, on the simplicity of life. That's Midbar. Now the second Midbar, the Aruch Hayim says, which is also connected to simplicity, but simplicity in a different sense, and that is humility. The desert does not show off with great mountains, great buildings, etc. The desert in its emptiness represents humility. And humility, too, is an essential aspect. When a person is filled with their own gaiva, with how great they are, then it's very difficult to nullify yourself to God, to accept God's will, to understand that in life things are not always going to go our way. We accept HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That requires a certain humility, the willingness to fail, the willingness to make mistakes when you're trying to do mitzvos, and don't have the attitude, if I can't do it perfect, I'm not going to do it at all. So the Orach Chaim sees in the first three parts of the verse, leaving Rafidim, that means cultivating an attitude of enthusiasm and passion. Number two, simplicity in the way one lives one's life. Number three, humility, willingness to learn. By the way, that's why it is no accident that a person who is very learned in Torah, the most common name we give the person is Talmid Chacham. Now, Talmid Chacham literally means, actually, it's a question of actually how you translate it. Talmid Chacham can either mean a wise student, or it might be a student of the wise. It's a question of how you translate it. Now, that may depend what the plural is, because the plural we commonly say Talmidei Chachamim, which indicates Chachamim is a modifier of the Talmud, students of wisdom. On the other hand, if it would be students of the wise, you could have kept the singular. You could have said Talmidei Chacham, right? If one Rebbe has many students, you can call them Talmidei Chacham Ploni. Okay, but be it as it may, it's interesting that the appellation that we use for the learned person is that they remain a student. Because true wisdom means you're always mevatel yourself to learn from whomever you can learn. In fact, it was amazing, and Art Scroll used this for their publicity, and they had a right to do so, that they had a picture of Rav Elyashiv Zatzal using an Art Scroll Gemara, a Hebrew. It was the Hebrew, it wasn't the English, but okay. And, you know, Rav Elyashiv, who's been through Shas quite a few times. In fact, somebody once asked Rav Elyashiv, how many times have you been through Shas? He just said, more times than you'd guess. He said, whatever. You know, so Rav Elyashiv certainly did not need anything that was written by, you know, a talented 25-year-old kolo person, undoubtedly very talented, to be sure. But Rav Elyashiv's idea was, if he could pick up anything from anybody. The Gemara compares it, Torah, Talmud Chacham to a fish, right? We say Torah is like our water, and when we're separated from water, we're like fish out of water. So this is what the Gemara says about fish. I don't know, I've not observed it myself, but it says, fish live totally in water. And yet when it rains and there are raindrops, the fish swim up to catch another drop. Now probably because they think it's a worm or something, you know, granted. But at least the picture you would get is, you're surrounded by water. And when another drop comes in, you want to get more. That's the derech of a Talmud Chacham, surrounded by Torah. But if there's another little thought, right? So Rav Elyashiv looked at all of these modern things that came out, because maybe there would be some thought, some insight, some reference that would add to his Torah knowledge. But that comes from deep humility. And that comes from being a Talmud Chacham. You're still a Talmud, you're still a student. Now I remember, I was once at an event with a very, very famous American academic. I don't want to mention his name. And he said, half joking, but I think, well, maybe one-third joking and two-thirds serious, actually. He said that for the first 25 years of his life, he listened. But now it's his time to talk, meaning to say he really doesn't care what anyone else says. His job is to, you know, talk about his views on things. And other people's views are not important. So he said. Again, the Talmid Chacham is exactly the opposite. You know, they tell the story about Rabbi Eliezer Silver. It was a great, great gadol who came from Europe. He came to America before World War II, actually shortly after World War I. And he lived most of those years in Cincinnati. A great Rav, a very, very colorful person as well. He once had to testify at a trial. And he had to be qualified as an expert witness. So he was asked, are you the greatest authority of Talmud in the United States? And he kept quiet for a moment, and they asked him, why don't you answer? He says, well, I try to be modest, but I'm under oath. He says, you know. But anyway, the story goes, Rabbi Laser Silver's first position was in Springfield, Massachusetts, near my hometown of Hartford, Connecticut. And the legend has it, I don't want to say it's true, but this is the legend. The legend has it that he was fired from that first position in the 1920s because he left the lights on in the shul too late at night because he was learning. And the president said, "You're wasting electricity." And when he said, "But I'm learning, I mean, I'm learning, I'm doing Torah," he says, "Well, we wanted a rabbi who finished his education. You know, if you're still learning, you know, you're not really a rabbi yet." Okay. The opposite of Talmud Chacham. Okay. All right, we now come to the fourth criterion. And that is, you'll notice the grammatical switch from Vayachanu to Vayichan. Now here already, Rashi already gives us an explanation. And the switch into the singular says that in order to receive Hashem's Torah, we had to be ki'ish echad, we had to be like one person, one heart, one soul, achdus. So we have a nice four-step plan, much, much, much easier said than done. Be enthusiastic, simplify your life, be humble, and love and connect with other Jews, ki'ish echad uvelev echad. And this is the spiritual preparation for Matan Torah. Now, what's interesting is, well, first of all, in the Haggadah of Pesach, when we have the Dayenus, I'm sure you've heard this over the years, so we say if Hashem would have just done this, Dayenus, so some of the Dayenus are very, very difficult to understand. You know, if Hashem would have split the Red Sea but wouldn't have brought us across on dry land. Do I turn over the side? Do you ask me to? Yeah, okay, just give me a second here. I'm sorry, let me, that's fine. Yeah, so, what's the Dayenu if Hashem would have split the Red Sea but wouldn't have brought us across, you know, and that's not necessarily Dayenu. But one of the Dayenus is, Ilu Kirvanu Lifnei Har Sinai. If Hashem would have brought us in front of Mount Sinai, Velo Nasan Lanu Es HaTorah, and would not have given us the Torah, Dayenu. That's enough. Well, why is that enough? Har Sinai without the Torah? What significance would that be? So many, many Mefarshim learn that if we would have been brought to Har Sinai and we would have reached the level of Ish Echad Uvalev Echad, even if nothing else would have happened, that would have been a great, wonderful, wonderful thing. The idea of unity in Klal Yisrael. Now, why is unity so important for Matan Torah? So, really, in a very simple reason, because here's the following. You know, the Torah has v'sach hakol 613 mitzvahs. And we say that there are 365 negative commandments, thou shalt not do. And there are 248 positive commandments, thou shalt do. And the Midrashim tell us that each positive commandment corresponds to a bone in your body that gives you spiritual life. And each negative commandment corresponds to a sinew or a ligament in which if you don't keep the negative commandment, that sinew, that vitality gets impaired. In other words, it corresponds to our bodies. Now again, we don't have a list of which mitzvah corresponds to which, but here's the problem. There has never been a human being in the history of the world who has been able to keep 613 commandments. It's impossible. Women in particular are excluded from any of them, or at least they're not obligated. Men, there are some mitzvahs only apply to Kohanim, some to Levim. Many mitzvahs only apply when there are korbanos or a Beis HaMikdash. And of course our brothers and sisters who are still in Chutz La'aretz lose out a whole bunch of mitzvos right there. But even if you live in Eretz Yisrael, I mean, how are you going to fulfill Shemitah? Okay, maybe by not eating certain things, but certainly, you know, you're not going to fulfill the mitzvah unless any of you have land. We are not going to fulfill the mitzvah of having the land rest, etc. So if the pshat is, there has never been an individual that's capable of keeping 613 mitzvahs, then all of us are crippled, all of us are defective. But more than that, none of us have a chance to have shleimus, because none of us can keep 613 mitzvahs. And the short answer is, this is where achdus comes in. Because when you unify yourself as part of the Jewish people, you become like a cell as part of a big organism. Now, the Jewish people, Klal Yisrael, is a transcendental entity with a past, present, and future. So, yes, I cannot do 613, you cannot do 613, he cannot do it, she cannot do it. But when I'm part of a nation, the mitzvahs of the men become the mitzvahs of the women, the mitzvahs of the women become the mitzvahs of the men, the mitzvah of the Kohen becomes the mitzvah of the Yisrael. The mitzvahs that were done when there was a Beis HaMikdash become my mitzvahs. The same way, for example, that if I do a mitzvah with my hand, I don't say it's my hand that did the mitzvah, it's me that did the mitzvah. When I am mechaber myself to Am Yisrael, with bonds of love and connectivity, the mitzvos of every segment become the mitzvos of every other segment. And therefore a true Kabbalah Satorah can exist only when there's unity and love. But this should be understood in not just a technical aspect of how do you get 613. It's also must be understood in a much more philosophical aspect, and that is, the Torah is the repository of Hashem's truth. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is infinite. That truth, therefore, must be infinite as well. There are infinite understandings of the Torah. Each one of us brings an understanding and a perspective to the Torah of Hashem that is unique to what we see. Now, in some ways, that it's hard to even articulate. Every one of us can see something in Torah that even the greatest, even Rashi, the Rambam, the greatest Gedolim, that was not their chelek. So when I disassociate myself from others, what happens is I only have my perspective. My perspective is finite. My perspective is incomplete. It is defective. Through unity, each one of us shares, either consciously or even subconsciously, metaphysically, so to speak, in the totality of the perspectives of Yidden as they view the Torah. And therefore, our truth becomes more complete. This is an important issue, perhaps, to think about in Eretz Yisrael in particular. You know, we had our Bechirot last week, and one of the interesting, one of the people who grew up in my shul in Silver Spring, Rabbi Dov Lipman, is now a Chaver Knesset, so... Yes, of course. I know him as a little boy. I guess I launched him on his political career. No, not really. But the thing is that now he's the Honorable Rabbi Dov Lipman. But, you know, but one of the interesting, and I don't want to talk about politics and the like, but as if you follow it, as you know, he did not run in a Haredi party. He ran in Lapid's party, Yesh Atid. And no, that's okay. I'm not critical. But one of the things I want to bring out is that... in the Knesset today, or the new Knesset, there is a pretty large percentage of religious people, religious Shomer Mitzvahs people who are affiliated with all sorts of parties. And in some ways, that's a very, very good thing, because it means that the power of Torah and Mitzvahs and Kedusha does not belong to a segment that is fighting for a particular private thing, but it's something that is Nitzpashet, B'chol Ha'am, in which people can share, people can learn, people can be influenced. It's actually a very nice thing to see yarmulke wearing people who are not connected to a particular political party. And part of the idea of Achdus is that we try to learn from each other. We try to see what each other has to offer. We try to understand that every Jew, certainly, actually every human is made in the image of God. It's interesting. I've said this before, and I just want to repeat it. Pirkei Avos has two statements in the name of Rabbi Akiva, and it's very important to focus on these two statements. The first statement is, Chaviv Adam Shenivra B'Tselem. Beloved is man, is human, because they were created in the image of God. The next mimer is, Chavivin Yisrael Shenikra'u Banim Lamakom. Now, people always ask the question, you know, are non-Jews, you know, created in the image of God, so to speak? Well, I think from Pirkei Avos, besides the Chumash itself, which indicates yes, which is probably the best source, but Pirkei Avos clearly indicates that if Rabbi Akiva's second statement is Chaviven Yisrael, then it must be that his first statement, Chaviv Adam, is going on everybody. So everybody is B'Tselem Elokim. Yisrael is special because we're banim, we're God's children, so to speak, whatever that would mean. So the point basically is to recognize the godliness in every person and to recognize if every Jew is God's child, then if I'm Jewish, that person is my brother or sister. That's right. Because we both have the same parents, so to speak. We're the child of God. Is to understand that there's much that we can learn from each other. And it is that achdus that allows us to have a more complete Kabbalah Satorah than if we simply remain within our perspective. And certainly that's true with machloks and within the Masorah. You know, who's right, Hasidim or Misnagdim? Right? Who's right, you know, Musar or Brisk? The only answer to that is they're both right. They both have perspectives, they both have hashkafas, they both have ideas, they both have insights that bring us closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And there's no real reason to be mevatel it, but rather one tries to take it in. I understand that makes life more confusing, and I understand the issue. Sometimes people say, well, just pick your side and stick with it. And that might be, again, that might be a necessary step for many people. I understand that idea too. In other words, my advocacy of what you might call pluralism within the Masorah would even include the Shita that says that's against pluralism. One can adopt an anti-pluralism as being legitimate within a hashkafa of pluralism too. In other words, those who reject also have a Shita that might make sense within a certain group of people. But this is the idea of Achdus as a chelek of Matan. So all of us have a beautiful mission statement. Or HaChaim says, do four things this week and you're going to be okay. Cultivate passion, seek simplicity, try to be humble, and seek unity in Avas Yisrael. And then we will be ready to be Makabel the Torah when we hear the Aseres HaDibros this Shabbos. Let me just mention one final thought. The Vilna Gaon actually makes a very similar point in a very famous story. There's a very famous story in Bava Metzia between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim about who the halacha is like, and we don't have to go into all of it. The story itself is very important on many levels, but Rabbi Eliezer was trying to convince the sages to listen to him, and he called upon the Almighty to do three miracles. And each time a miracle happened, the Chachamim said, we don't listen to miracles. Finally, Hashem himself said, the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer, and we don't listen to you either. Lo b'shamayim, the Torah is not in heaven. Now, that needs a lot of explanation, but I want to focus on what might be a relatively minor point. Excuse me. What were the three miracles that Rabbi Eliezer did? So miracle number one was he wanted the river to change its course. I'm sorry, he wanted the carob tree to fly away. He says, if the halacha is like me, let the carob tree fly away. And the carob tree flew away, and they basically said, we don't listen to carob trees. He then said, if the halacha is like me, let the river change its course. And the river changed its course. And they said, we don't listen to rivers. And then he said, if the halacha is like me, let the walls of the Beis HaMedrash collapse. And the walls were about to collapse, and Rabbi Yehoshua ordered the walls not to collapse, and the walls didn't know who to listen to. So they remained like the Leaning Tower of Pisa. Chazal were apparently explaining why the Beis Medrash was in such decrepit shape, and they had a story that justified it, and the like. Now the Vilna Gaon says, what's the significance of the three miracles? So I just want to say very, very quickly, that he actually says, and this parallels the Or HaChaim's words, for three of the four, and you'll see. And that is, Rabbi Eliezer couldn't convince them logically that he was correct. So he's trying to convince them in an ad hominem way by showing that he has the qualities of a Talmud Chacham who should be listened to. And the first quality is simplicity of lifestyle. He is menutak min hachomer. He is removed from physicality and materialism, and that is symbolized by the charuvim, by the buxer. Those of you that had dried buxer yesterday know what I'm talking about. It's a very, very simple, unappetizing food, and Chazal often use it as the semel, as the symbol of those who live a simple, austere lifestyle. The Gemara says by Rabbi Chanina ben Daisa, the whole world gets parnasa in the merit of Rabbi Chanina ben Daisa, and Chanina ben Daisa just eats a small measure of charuvim in the whole week. So he is showing, I am mistapek b'muatz. The water, the change of the water, that's the quality of humility. Because Torah is compared to water, and one of the reasons is because water goes from high ground to low ground. Listen to me because I'm modest. Now you might think, well, wait a second here. That doesn't make a lot of sense. I show you how humble I am by doing a supernatural miracle to show how humble I am? Is that kind of not showing off? But the truth of the matter is, again, we're running out of time, but Bekitzer, true humility is not inconsistent with knowing that you're humble and even having to demonstrate that sometimes. Humility does not mean you think you're nothing. It would have been crazy for Moshe Rabbeinu to be praised because he thought he was the worst person in Am Yisrael. That would not have been meritorious. That would have been delusional. That would have been, you know, mentally defective. Rather, true humility means that you acknowledge that all of your gifts come from Hashem and you have to use them with responsibility and not as a matter of thinking you're better than other people. Rabbi Eliezer has a halachic matter here. To him, it's a matter of truth. It's a matter of convincing. And therefore, he is basically saying, I am meyed, shamayim va'aretz, to be meyed on me. That I am not doing this out of my kavod and out of my gaiva. And that's appropriate for a great person to do. And then finally, the Beis HaMedrash corresponds to diligence, hasmada, enthusiasm, and passion. He was the first in and the last out. So, in effect, the three miracles of Rabbi Eliezer correspond with three out of the four steps of the Or HaChaim: simplicity, modesty, and enthusiasm and passion. Which step is missing? Achdus. Because indeed, that was the problem. He refused to collaborate with the Chachamim. So that's exactly the point. Three out of the four were there, but the lack of achdus meant that his words were not totally accepted. So these are the hachanas from Matan Torah. May all of us be zoche to be makabel. Thank you. So you'll still send me a